Today is April 30th, 2009, and this is the Apple Weekly Report, episode number 147, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor for TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, science officer. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/AWR. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at awr@macobserver.com.
Science Officer Brian, you know what? I feel safer already because you're on the job and there's still science to do.
Jeff is laughing at me because moments before, like literally seconds before we started recording, my wife brought in Star Trek, the original series, season one on Blu-ray, which just arrived.
And, you know, and Brian, you have the most incredible self-control of anyone I know, because anyone else would have hopped back on the microphone, told me to get bent, they're off to watch Star Trek.
Dude, I want to. I'm supposed to. Okay, let me rephrase that. I'm going to go see a show with the wife in San Francisco tonight. Music for Animals is playing. And now I don't want to go.
So not only can you not go and watch your Star Trek episodes as soon as we're done recording, but you have to wait until after you go see the show tonight as well.
And then I have to work in the morning. Where's the justice in that?
Oh, my God.
It's Star Trek, the original series on Blu-ray. I am so excited.
As well you should be. I mean, those Blu-ray discs have the digitally remastered episodes with the enhanced special effects and the 7.1 surround sound. And
yeah, how do you feel about that, by the way? I'm kind of thinking I'm going to watch it with the original effects.
You know, I watched several of the episodes on television, the remastered episodes on television, and I really, really liked them because they don't change the story at all. But all of those washed out and faded colors are fixed.
Yeah.
The images are so much sharper, and the special effects that in some situations detracted from the stories are gone and replaced with special effects that properly depict what they were trying to show.
Yeah, I'll probably give them a shot.
I was pleasantly surprised.
I'm just excited. But before we bore all our listeners thinking that we're Star Trek nerds, which, by the way, I'm a Star Trek nerd.
But we both are.
We should talk about this whole Apple thing.
This whole Apple thing?
This whole
Apple thing. There's a company called Apple?
Yep. And if you want to, by the way, follow me on Twitter, you can do so at twitter.com/TMOBrian. That's Brian with a Y.
And if you want to follow me so that you can see what weird little things happen in my head, you can follow me at Twitter, twitter.com/jgamet.
Yeah, this is probably going to be the shortest show that we've ever recorded because all I want to do is, you know, go watch Star Trek.
Well, you know, I can wrap up the whole show for us right now. Apple, Steve Jobs, iPhone, thanks for listening. We'll see you again next week.
Audible.com.
Audible.com. Thanks for listening. Right. We'll see you next week. There we go.
We're kidding, folks. We're kidding. Why don't you hit us with the intro?
Okay. Apple is on the prowl for new talent. Shareholders approved a say-on-pay requirement for Apple executives. Apple picked up another writer on the lawsuit Express, this time for overstepping its bounds with takedown notices. And Steve Jobs really wants to tear down his old house.
Apple has been on a binge, and I don't mean some sort of, you know, vegan food orgy. No, the company has been hiring other companies' top executives, especially, it seems, chip dudes. For instance, Apple has hired not one, but two. I'm so amused by this. Two now former chief technology officers from AMD's Graphic Products Group. That was a group built from AMD's acquisition of video card maker ATI. Bob Drieben joined Apple as an unspecified quote-unquote senior director, while Raja Koduri has moved to Apple, and we don't even know his title.
And in the meanwhile, Apple has raided Big Redmond to hire one Richard Teversham, former director of business insights and strategy, I just love that title, for Microsoft's Xbox team. The dapperly named Mr. Teversham is joining Apple's European team, where he will reportedly take on some quote-unquote education-related role at the company. All of these guys follow Mark Papermaster, raided from IBM, much to Big Blue's chagrin. Mr. Papermaster was also a chip guy, which brings us to a Wall Street Journal article that said Apple is working hard to put in place the infrastructure to develop and build its own chips for use in iPhone and iPod touches, and perhaps some other unspecified devices in the future.
I'm Richard Teversham, reporting for duty. Very dapper name, Richard Teversham.
Do you think he wears a bowler?
I'm guessing, yes, I think he does.
Okay.
After a long fight against the shareholder proposal looking for oversight on executive compensation, Apple's board of directors finally approved the so-called say-on-pay provision. The say-on-pay proposal, or the eloquently named shareholder proposal number regarding advisory vote on compensation, was originally reported as defeated because shareholder abstention votes had been accidentally counted as no votes. And I don't know, maybe we should put quote marks around accidentally there. According to Apple, Apple said the mistake was due to human error, which Apple regrets. The reversal means that shareholders will be able to vote on executive pay changes. Apple plans to implement the changes in 2010. That's just 2 years ahead of Quetzalcoatl's return and ahead of expected regulatory changes or new laws that will require publicly traded companies to offer some sort of say-on-pay voting for its shareholders. As long as I can make you laugh, buddy.
You know, never, ever would I have expected us to have Quetzalcoatl in one of our podcasts. And there you go. Okay. AudioWorks was hit with a notice from Apple demanding that it remove iPod and iPhone-related information from its website over copyright and Digital Millennium copyright issues. And now the company is fighting back by suing Apple. AudioWorks, with a little help from the Electronic Frontier Foundation, is claiming that the content on its site neither infringes on Apple's copyrights nor violates the DMCA. The suit is asking for attorney fees and costs, along with any relief the court deems just and proper. Information on an AudioWorks-hosted forum called Blue Wiki described how to use an iPhone or iPod with music and movie management applications other than iTunes. I know. But it took that information down after receiving a demand from Apple's legal team back in December of 2008. The company said at the time it removed the post because it was afraid of being, quote, sued out of existence, unquote.
In addition to his wars with Research in Motion, Microsoft, and even his own health, Steve Jobs is also in the midst of a fight against preservationists who were trying to prevent him from demolishing a Palo Alto mansion he owns. The case, which has been going on for years, was back in the Palo Alto City Council meeting Tuesday night, an event Mr. Jobs didn't attend as his attorney said he wasn't strong enough to handle the meeting if it lasted too long. At issue is a 17,000-square-foot house built in 1925 by one Daniel C. Jackling, a pioneer. We have dapper names today.
We certainly do.
This is a dapper webcast, or podcast, I like to call it. A pioneering. So, Daniel Jackling was a pioneering miner who made his fortune in copper mines in Utah. Preservationists want to preserve his house either through on-site restoration or through moving it to another location. This fight began long ago and has vacillated back and forth between the courts, Palo Alto's planning commission, and the city council itself. And it shows no sign of ending anytime soon.
Apparently not. And it's a good thing that Steve Jobs has someone to go to these events for him so yes. He can sit at home and nap.
Yes. And it's time for the Context Machine. That's where Jeff and I delve a little more deeply, but not too deeply as to cut into my Star Trek time, into the news to provide context for what's going on. I kid. So, I think the most interesting news this week for just a whole boatload of reasons are all these
people. A whole starship load of reasons.
A whole starship full of reasons. But all these people that Apple has apparently been hiring for the last year and a half.
You know, I find this very interesting as well. I can't wait to see what comes out of all these acquisitions, both of companies and people, that have been happening over the past few months. Well, you know, this isn't just by accident that they're picking up all these people.
No, not at all. I was talking to someone in the real world, meaning not online, about this, about Apple, like, because the first person, it was after the news that Dreeben had been hired away from AMD.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and funny enough, Dreeben left AMD in 2008 and started in January. So he left in January of 2008 at AMD. And he started working, it seems, roughly in January of 2009 at Apple, which really, of course, seems like a non-compete contract.
That's sure what that sounds like to me.
Yeah, it sure does. But it was after that news hit that he had started working at Apple, and you know, and I said incorrectly that there's just no way Apple's going to be making its own chips, and I was wrong because it seems like Apple's going to be making their own chips.
You know, that's kind of what it looks like. If you put together buying PA Semi plus bringing Papermaster on board, and now Dreeben
and Raja.
That's right, Raja. Yeah, that's really kind of what that feels like, is that Apple is getting into their own chip design.
So there's a Wall Street Journal article that we're going to be covering on Friday, which it'll probably my column on the subject is probably going to come out before you hear this podcast. But the Wall Street Journal is saying that Apple has also hired like another 100 or so chip people. And that their whole point is that Steve wants to be able to design chips and not have the technology that they're developing make their way into their competitors' products, because the people that they're outsourcing to for the manufacturing process are, you know, basically selling it to Apple's competition.
All right. So I'm just going to take a step back and point out the fact that since we are now talking about a column that everyone has already read, but you have not yet written,
yeah,
means that we have crossed over into a problem with temporal mechanics.
Yeah, I've got to go watch Star Trek.
Yeah.
that's pretty funny, man. But yeah, be that as it may, this is apparently exactly their plan. That they are specifically trying to make their own chips, and you know, this is all about Steve wanting to control the whole widget, and apparently that extends even to the processor that makes the widget go.
You know, I can totally understand that, considering the level of control Apple has historically had over their products. I mean, when you do control everything from the original design all the way to the finished product, it's so much easier to make something that integrates well and works smoothly with all the other components.
Mm-hmm.
So why not extend that to actually designing the chips that run in the devices that you're making?
And why be beholden to anyone? Now, and this is for iPhones and iPod Touches and, you know, the rest of the iPod line and the iPod Super Touch that hasn't been announced yet and whatever else is coming. I don't think Apple has any interest. I don't even think it would be to their benefit to make the central processing units that make a Mac a Mac.
You know, I don't think that they're going to go that far either.
No, they want to. They need to stick with that relationship with Intel. Apple has benefited greatly from moving to Intel. And I think that it's going to stay. So we're definitely talking iPhones, iPods, iPod Touches.
I think you're right. And when Apple was in a position where they were working with what I will call relatively proprietary chips, mm-hmm. you know, back when they moved over to the PowerPC processors,
because mm-hmm.
at the time they weren't being used in many other devices.
Right.
They hit a ceiling, and moving away from that to the more open and far more competitive Intel-based processors, I think that made a huge difference for the company. I was really worried when they were making that move, but they made the right move, and I'm not worried anymore.
Yeah, I actually had gone on record for years as saying Apple is not going to move to Intel. Now, I did give myself the caveat that said if they do, they will not allow Mac OS X to run on non-Apple hardware. That was my, you know, that was my escape clause.
Great way to cover your ass. Good job.
Thank you. Well, you know, what with the smartness and all. But but I was wrong about them not doing it, obviously, because now for several years they've been with Intel. But I'm pretty comfortable saying that you know, all this stuff that's going on with these chip guys, it's all about the devices and not about the Macs.
Yes. And, you know, yeah, the whole thing with going with Intel, I think that really opened up a lot of doors for Apple as far as their hardware designs go.
Mm-hmm.
And it wouldn't surprise me if when they made that switch to Intel, they were already working on their plans that we're seeing today with all of these other acquisitions and what appears to be their plans to design their own chips.
Well, let's actually look at the chronology then. So they bought PA Semi, was it 3 years ago?
I don't know if it's quite that long ago, but it's, so we will call it a fairly recent thing within the last couple of years. How's that sound?
Yeah, I think it was between 2 and 3 years ago though. Okay. It wasn't that recently. And, you know, so now they've got the ability to, you know, make the chips. But now they need the guys to be able to really step up the design. You know, and we're talking about some very serious money here. I mean, these people were pulled away from real companies with and, you know, we're probably making real money. So, you know, Apple seems to be really dedicated to this notion. And, you know, it's pretty exciting. And the fact that they've got these two graphics guys in particular from AMD, because, you know, Papermaster's thing was his chips were like the Cell processor.
And he was also really big in the whole Blade Server end of things at IBM.
Right, that was one of the things he did, but then he also he'd helped develop the Cell, and had right. spent years on the PowerPC side of things. So he's got that experience, whereas these guys have the graphic experience, and that's because I think Apple is very serious about the amount of money they can make with the iPod Touch and this iPod Super Touch that's going to be coming out, and the iPhone itself being a game device.
Yeah, and okay, you know, this plays right into something we discussed on one of our podcasts, it was like 2 or 3 weeks ago, mm-hmm. where we were talking about how Apple is not afraid to continue investing in development and R&D, mm-hmm. where other companies are not doing that.
Right.
And I think this is a perfect example of that. They're bringing on board the people that can make those things happen, and they're not afraid to pay for them.
No, and this is actually it's the I'm going to look at it because I don't remember the exact thing. My first line, no, I didn't get that far. But one of my central points in the column that our listeners have read but I haven't written is that you know, Apple is really showing how a company that is on solid footing with a solid cash foundation can really clean up in the midst of economic turmoil.
Oh, yes. And it looks to me like that's exactly what they're doing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think that we're going to continue to hear stories about other people that have been hired for different things throughout the company that we've had this little spate this week of the three guys. There's the guy from Microsoft and the two guys from AMD. But I don't think we're done with this news. I think there's going to be more to come.
I think that you are right.
All right. And I've got a question for you, though.
Okay.
So if you remember, part of the deal that they were concerned about, that IBM was concerned about with Apple and Papermaster, was that he had all this Blade server knowledge, and he also has all this knowledge dealing with PowerPC and Cell.
Sure.
right? And the cell processor, by the way, is basically, it was the next generation up, an entirely different kind of class of processor that, is the cell being used in the PS3?
Yes, I believe it is.
I think it is, as a matter of fact. So anyway, he's got all of this information. They were, you know, concerned about, you know, the fact that he'd be able to take all this information to Apple, and that was the point of the non-compete clause, et cetera. Now, Apple made him the vice president of device hardware engineering, or devices hardware engineering. I forget which.
I think it's just device.
Right. And they're basically saying that he's going to be doing other things at Apple. He's you know, that chips weren't going to be his thing. Well, now I wonder if they were telling the truth.
You do have to wonder. Now, even if he's involved in chips in some way, I'm certain that Apple has figured out how to deal with that in such a way to keep the courts happy. Because as I recall, part of the deal that Apple struck with IBM to allow Papermaster to start his job was that the court gets to do a couple of valuations on what he's involved in.
True enough.
So
yeah, I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah, so even if he is involved in chips, they will have put this together in such a way that they'll be protected when they have to go to their routine hearings.
Yeah. So we've got all this. Apple right now has basically been putting very powerful processors in the iPod Touch and the iPhone. You know, they're very powerful handheld computers.
Yes.
And they can do, as a matter of fact, I'm going to institute a brand new feature right here. We haven't even talked about this. A brand new
feature. Oh, I'm excited.
Of the Apple Weekly Report, which is the iPhone application recommendation of the week. And my recommendation for today is Doodle Jump. Have you played that?
Maybe. Is that the one with stick figures and the red ball?
Nope. It is these kind of crude hand-drawn. It's like Qbert's demented and yet less capable cousin. And he jumps from level to level. And you control the direction he's jumping with the accelerometer by moving the iPhone.
Okay, that's very cool.
Yeah, it's a really cool application. I think it's 99 cents. It's a great little application. And I mentioned that because, by the way, we have a link to the to Doodle Jump in the show notes. Now you know that and you've seen it, but yet we haven't put it there yet.
See, temporal mechanics. Okay, here's my app pick, and it is Speed Test. And it's an application that runs on your iPhone and hooks up to speedtest.net and checks your bandwidth usage for you. So it tells you how fast your upload and download speeds on your network are.
Cool. All right. So we got Doodle Jump. We got Speed Test. I mentioned Doodle Jump because, you know, it's not like it's some sort of, you know, 3D game that's the graphics intensive. As a matter of fact, it's not. But the iPhone is... I think that it actually sort of demonstrates the power of the iPhone because there are a lot of calculations that are going on, and so, you know, if we can do the things that we're doing now with the second iteration of the iPhone, I can't imagine where Apple intends to take us by bringing on all these people.
I'm betting it's going to be pretty good. All right, so I'm going to mix up our flow again because I have to jump back and share another application for the iPhone that seems totally appropriate considering the overall theme we've had for the show today, which is Star Trek.
Yep.
So Paramount has released a free Phaser application to coincide with the new Star Trek movie that's coming out. And cool. I believe it's called Star Trek Phaser. Uh-huh. And so you can walk around and shoot your friends with your phaser. You can set it to stun or kill.
Awesome. What's it called? Star Trek Phaser?
Star Trek Phaser.
All right. We'll have a link to that in the show notes as well.
Excellent.
Yeah. So where Apple's taking us with all this, I don't know, but I'm looking forward to it. And I think that the company right now, I think that these moves are going to help cement Apple's leadership position for many years to come, because no one's going to, if no one has access to what they're doing for these devices, what, you know, how they're making these devices go, people, their competitors are going to have a much harder time keeping up with them.
Yes, they will. And
I think that's the whole point.
Yes. And, you know, all these people that are worried about whether or not Apple is going to be able to maintain its focus when the inevitable day comes that Steve Jobs steps away from the company completely, mm-hmm. they need to be looking at what Apple is doing today. Mm-hmm. And this should help reassure people that Apple has a very clear vision of where they're going.
Oh, yeah.
And I think they'll be able to maintain that vision even when Steve Jobs decides to pack it up and go hang on a beach somewhere.
Yep. I actually think that Apple stock should – I think that if investors were looking deeply enough at what these hires mean, that they should have been pumping the stock up.
Yeah, they should have. And, you know, when I'm king of the world, it's going to be different.
Fair enough. Speaking of king of the world, that is such a great opportunity for me to make my usual – seemingly random segue, because I want to talk about Audible, our sponsor of the week, and I want to yes. talk about my favorite book, or at least my favorite series of books.
I think that sounds great, because last time we talked about Audible, we highlighted one of my favorite books of all time. So now it's your turn.
Fair enough. So the books that I want to talk about are the Song of Ice and Fire series from George R.R. Martin. And now, Jeff, you're going to have to stop me if I wax poetic too long, because I can talk about these books forever. As a matter of fact, I gave you the first book, Game of Thrones. How did you like it?
You're totally setting me up.
I'm setting you up in a jerk kind of way. Yes, I am.
Yes. So I would love to tell you how much I liked it, except I moved right after I got the book, and it's still packed away in a box. Although,
well, I have an idea for you. I have an idea for you. Why don't you download the Audible version of the book and listen to it? Because it actually sounds pretty cool. As a matter of fact, before we tell you a little bit more about Audible, we'll just take the time right now. Let's play a clip.
Okay.
So this is a clip from of Game of Thrones, part of a series called A Song of Ice and Fire by George R.R. Martin. This is a clip from the unabridged version.
The camp is 2 miles further on over that ridge, hard beside a stream, Will said. I got close as I dared. There's 8 of them, men and women both. No children I could see. They put up a lean-to against the rock. The snow has pretty well covered it now, but I could still make it out. No fire burning, but the fire pit was still plain as day. No one moving. I watched a long time. No living man ever lay so still. Did you see any blood? Well, no, Will admitted. Did you see any weapons? Some swords, a few bows. One man had an axe. Heavy-looking, double-bladed, a cruel piece of iron. It was on the ground beside him, right by his hand.
That just sounds, I mean, that sounds great, man. The guy,
he has the right voice.
He's got the right voice. Does. Yeah. And I like the way he's actually doing some of the characters. So, you know,
I have a quick question for you.
Yeah.
So knowing how all this technology works, I'm just curious, how are you getting that audio for the audiobook?
Actually, I grabbed it from the sample that Audible's offering through Wiretap Studios, which is like one of the coolest pieces of software ever. We gave it an Editor's Choice Award back in January 2008.
Yeah, yeah, it's actually a great piece of software. So, all right, that's the tech guy in me just having to
know. Fair enough. So what Audible does is what you just heard. They take books and they do dramatic readings of them. They've also they do newspapers and I think they do magazines. Do they do magazines? Yes, newspapers and magazines. And they do these dramatic readings, and it's a way for you to listen to literature on your iPod, on your iPhone, even on your computer, or, you know, whatever.
Yes, and to make it even more enticing, all of our listeners can get a free audiobook.
Yes.
Yes.
All they have to do is they sign up for, I think it's the gold membership. They get a free audiobook, which they can keep whether or not they stay a member.
Yes, and it's like a two-week free trial, and they just have to go to the special URL that we have in our show notes.
So if our listeners go to audible.com, audiblepodcast.com/Apple Weekly, actually it works either way, you get the special offer.
Very cool.
Create the account, install the software, get your free book. And if you're getting, I know that you had someone thank you for mentioning The Hitchhiker's Guide at Audible.
Yes. Yes, one of our followers and on Twitter and podcast listener, and I feel horrible. Like I can't remember the name off the top of my head, but they picked up Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy with a free offer based on my recommendation, and they're very happy, and so that's just awesome.
Well, and if you didn't get Hitchhiker's Guide, and if you're looking for a book to get, and you like fantasy, grab a Game of Thrones from George R. R. Martin. Now, I'm just going to give a short spiel on the book. I loathe modern fantasy. I loathe people that can't tell a story without putting a quest as an artificial device for them to be able to get people from point A to point B, to have new and different things to interact because they can't otherwise tell a story. I want to throw the wheel of never ending frickin' time. I mean, what?
All right, so I'll jump in before you end up spending like 3 hours talking about the fantasy stuff. And I'll say the fantasy series that I have enjoyed was the Lord of the Rings series. And then the next one that came along that I actually enjoyed was Stephen R. Donaldson's Chronicles of Thomas Covenant.
Well, Stephen, I actually blame Stephen for part of this because I also love the Thomas Covenant books, but I think that Stephen showed that other people can also write quest books because Tolkien did it, and that's what everybody does. So, like, he helps set the stage for other people to not be able to tell a story otherwise also. That's another issue, because I actually like his writing. A Game of Thrones and A Song of Ice and Fire, the short version is this. While it is a fantastical setting, it is some of the best writing I have ever read, ever.
And if you get it from Audible, some of the best reading you will hear.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a great book. If you want to check out Audible, do it with this book. A Game of Thrones, A Song of Ice and Fire, Book 1 by George R. R. Martin. And, okay. And there you have it. Thanks to Audible.
They are rocking people.
Mm-hmm. All righty, moving on. I've got a question for you, yet another question for you, Jeff.
I can't wait to hear how I'm going to be set up this time.
How do you feel about the issue of architectural preservation?
I have mixed feelings about that. There are certain situations where I think architectural preservation is an important thing for historical value. And there are other times where I think that it is pushed forward for sentimental reasons.
Yes. I would agree with that. I'll take it one step further. There are, I think, important buildings on the planet. Some of those buildings are buildings and some of them are houses. There are important buildings. And there are buildings that should be preserved for both historical reasons, for community reasons, for character reasons, for even commercial tourism reasons. There are things that should be preserved. But then there are other things that just don't matter. And we can't keep everything because it just doesn't work that way. I'm not some kind of expert on this issue with Steve Jobs' house, but you know, a house built by a copper miner at 17, who cares? Give it up, people. Let it go.
You know, if someone could show me a compelling reason for preserving that house, I don't know what that would be, but if someone could show me a very compelling reason for preserving that house, I would say, all right, so it's time for Steve Jobs to work with the city and this preservation organization to make sure that the house is is protected in an appropriate way. But I'm having a hard time understanding why a copper miner from Utah that built a house in 1925, why that specific piece of property needs to be preserved.
There are people that just can't let anything go, and the people that think that everything needs to be preserved. And it's a position. It's fine. You know, we still live in a mostly free country. They're welcome to have that position and to think that way. I personally disagree, and I think that sometimes, maybe even oftentimes, that the old needs to make way for the new. We're talking about a mansion. I mean, you know, I don't know. You want to preserve the Winchester Mystery House? All right, I'm all for you there. It's already a state park, but you know that's one thing. But you know, just a house
Winchester
in a very
mystery house. That has some very unique properties to it that really set it apart from other mansions.
Yeah. And this particular mansion, as I understand it, is just in a, you know, it's in an extraordinarily exclusive neighborhood in Palo Alto. It's not like the, you know, the public has any access to it anyway. And I don't know. It's just strange to me. And the thing is the city of Palo Alto is actually on Steve's side. They want to, they have already okayed him to be able to tear it down. And it was preservationists that basically blocked that and through the courts.
Right.
But that said, the court, now what happened is the courts basically said to the city, you haven't shown a compelling reason. Because apparently the city argued that it would be too expensive to preserve and that therefore, it was better for the city for the house to be demolished and then this new place that Steve wants to be built put in its place. And
right.
The court said, go ahead.
So the info that was provided to the city and to the preservation group said that it was going to cost over $13 million to preserve the house, whereas it was going to cost just a little over $8 million to tear it down and build a new house.
Well, then that was basically provided by the consultants that were hired by Steve Jobs.
Sure.
And so the preservationists are saying that they want independent consultants.
Well, then they need to hire someone to come in and do that.
Yeah, I like the argument that the coverage that the San Jose Mercury News is the people that covered it. And that's actually why we're talking about it is because, what this says about Steve Jobs' health, but we'll get to that in a second. I think that the San Jose Mercury News had a reporter at this particular meeting just, you know, wanting to see whether or not Steve Jobs was going to show up. But, you know, that's another issue. According to that coverage, the woman who's spearheading this preservation used to live there, I guess, when she was a kid. So before Steve Jobs bought it. And she... one of their arguments is that there was a person that sent a proposal to Steve to move the house.
And right.
Steve rejected that proposal, is what she says. But what Steve's attorney counters with is because that proposal basically had Steve paying for everything.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like a business deal that I would want to enter into as the property owner.
Right. And, you know, in her, it was really kind of interesting to the quote that was given for her position, which was simply like, well, you know, I think he should have to pay for it basically because he's rich. So, you know,
I think Steve Jobs should buy me 2 30-inch cinema displays, a brand new Mac Pro what's the highest number of processors I can get now? Like 1,000?
Yeah, something like that.
Because he has lots of money.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really think this property has much to do with the community. I don't think that it's holding anything together. I don't think it offers any true benefit to the community. And that to me, it's the benefit to the community is where I come down to. For instance, there were some houses in Austin, Texas, that a church had been buying up. They've been buying up all these Victorian houses that surrounded their church. And they wanted to tear them down to put up a parking lot in the middle of a parking garage in the middle of this very, old fashioned neighborhood. And you know, the community, the local community fought and fought and fought against that. And I think that they actually won. But part of their argument was that, you know, the people that go to that church don't live in the neighborhood, you know, and they're wanting to make our neighborhood look ugly. And they don't even live here. And I side with them on that. So they weren't wanting to preserve the houses for the house's sake. They were wanting to preserve the houses for the neighborhood's sake. And in if you want to start talking about the benefit to the community, I think that's a great argument to make. But preservation for preservation's sake doesn't make much sense to me.
You know, I can understand the sentimental ties that people have to certain buildings, houses, and why they would want to preserve them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you really need to take into consideration the overall benefit to the community that structure is in. And if it's something that is not going to be beneficial to the community as a whole, then you need to look really closely at why you want to preserve that.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Yeah,
that's what I think.
To the other thing you mentioned about the San Jose Mercury News being at the council hearing because of the likelihood of Steve Jobs being there,
mm-hmm.
I think you're right. And I think that had Steve Jobs shown up, it would have been chaos and pandemonium, and it would have been all about how does Steve Jobs look? Does he appear like he's getting better? Is he still too thin? And it would have completely detracted from the purpose of that meeting.
I agree. But let me take the devil's advocate position. And that's simply that Steve is supposed to return to work in June, which is roughly 31 days away. So figure that it's probably WWDC when he's going to make an appearance.
That sounds reasonable to me.
And he's supposedly too weak to attend a meeting if it lasts too long. That was kind of interesting to me. My guess is that Steve just didn't want to go, and he was fine with his attorney handling everything.
Yeah, and it was far more graceful to say, well, you know, Steve's recovering, and mm-hmm. And that's just too much energy for him right now, as opposed to saying, you know, he really doesn't want to be around you people.
Right. But what is also interesting is that no one picked up on that and made hay from it.
And, yeah, that's true.
You know, people were trying to make hay about his health every little single issue. And no one made much of it to do about this particular event at all.
Well, it's about the house, man. We got to save the house.
Right. And this is why we wanted to talk about this in the Context Machine, which is the whole issue of his health and how it relates to Apple. Sorry about the tangent on preservation.
Yeah. But, you know, benefit it all to the kind community. Of came together. I can only imagine the emails we're going to be getting about this.
Probably. Of course, you know, no one complained about my offensive fake quote that I gave a record executive. I can't believe that no one complained and told me what a horrible person I am.
You know, I love your fake quotes. You come up with some fantastic fake quotes, and the voices that go along with them. Oh. Well,
thanks, but that one was just offensive. That was just obnoxiously offensive.
Well, I guess what the bottom line is, if you're entertaining me,
it's all that counts, man.
That's all that counts. And I'm assuming there's at least three people out there that have a similar sense of humor to me. So there's got to be at least three other people. So there's four of us. There's nearly a handful of people that are entertained by that.
Nearly. Take us out, brother.
Okay. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, send your audio or text comments to awr@macobserver.com. And remember, succinctness is next to steveliness. And that's this week's Apple Weekly Report. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sending us your comments and feedback. Feel free to follow me on Twitter. You can do that at twitter.com/jgamet.
And you can follow me at twitter.com/tmobrian. That's Brian with a Y. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for us. And that's all for this week.
And Science Officer Brian, live long and prosper. And to all of our listeners, as always, stay subscribed.
I am Kirok. We'll see you online at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com.
Con!